Blog Talk Radio.
Hi, Blog Talk Radio. Hi, Russ Johnson here. Welcome to a new day, a new month. This is June 7th. It's a Sunday. And we want to see if Julian is available. Was that 406 or 206? What is her number? Let's see. In the meantime, let's talk about Edison while I look.
This is the light bulb. But we now know that that's not true at all. Thomas Edison did not invent the light bulb. Rather, he purchased the patent from Henry Woodward and Matthew Evans in 1880, and then he hired a team of 50 interns to perfect the patent, which he then stamped his name on and made a fortune. Incredible, right? And it wasn't until just a few years ago that they started teaching otherwise in schools. But do you want to hear something that Thomas Edison did invent that almost nobody knows? The electric chair. That's right. Thomas Edison made money off a device that he created that would be used to kill people. And guess what else? It uses the DC current. I said it before and I'll say it again. Thomas Edison was a liar. He was a killer of innocent animals for profit. And overall, he was a person of incredibly low character. Edison was not a brilliant inventor. He was a brilliant marketer. And that's how he was essentially able to fool most of the world for more than 100 years into thinking that he had created the things that he, well, actually hadn't.
Wow, that's an eye-opener, huh? Well, let's see if Jillian Green is available for us to help us understand what's going on planet Earth with all the people in the streets all over the world. Interesting. Jillian, are you there? Are you?
Good afternoon.
Good afternoon.
Hello.
This is Russell.
Yes, how are you? How are you today?
I'm with the Galactic Command, and they told me to call you. They abducted me last night, and they say,
we'll
let you make a phone call, but we're going to hold you for a while.
You only
so
get one call.
I get one call. Hey, what's happening all across the world with these marches? Everybody in the street. Millions
just
of people.
A sec.
Okay.
Oops. Can you hear me?
Yes, loud and clear. What is going on? I'm looking at New Zealand, Germany, Spain, England, Ireland, Poland, Australia, London, Finland, Japan, Italy. It's all over the world.
Well, you know,
it's
the old rat story. When you shut two or three rats up together, they do fine for a while, but when you shut 10 in the same space, they go crazy. And that's exactly what's happening to people all over the world. They're going crazy. And, you know, it was told to me a long, long time ago, Russ, that when this energy wave, and my off-planet friend described it as a diamond wave that will roll like a sound frequency across the planet, and those who are mentally and spiritually prepared to receive enlightenment will absorb the light and their horizons will expand. But the vast majority of people who are not ready to receive it will go crazy. It will drive them crazy. It will affect their brains and drive them crazy. And I think this is what we're seeing now, a kind of mass hysteria.
Well,
just
it's
one
moving.
Thing after another.
But the kids are in the street. I mean, it's really basically the young people, you know, the 20, the 30, 40-year-old people. I don't see too many 60, 70, 80, 90-year-old people in the street. But the young people are in the street.
Got the energy. The old people haven't got the energy, Russ. But they may be thinking it.
So what do you see coming up? I mean, 2025 is approaching. It's not too far away.
I know. Well, 2020, which is the date everybody's now talking about. I don't have any information on it, but a lot of other people, a lot of seers and clairvoyants out there are telling me that they are getting information to say these changes will have speeded up and moved forward, and they're expecting changes 2020 rather than 2025. So, you know, they may be right. I mean, I only still know 2025. But I'm not saying that it's not possible to be sooner. So I'd be watching this winter. I know that we're going to have more trouble this winter, a lot more.
Is that right?
Because we're going to have shortages.
Oh, yeah.
Well,
yeah,
we're going to have global food shortages. And, you know, when people can't get the things that they feel they need, and let alone the things they want, then they really get nasty. So
okay.
It's going to get worse.
Yeah, but there is, they already have forecasted a meat shortage. You know, the people who like beef and turkey and chicken and lamb and whatever else, they can't get, they won't be able to get it. If they get it, it's going to be
right.
Three times more than what they paid for it before. Now, for the people who are vegetarians and they don't bother with the meat anyway, they do a protein, a vegetable protein. Have you ever tried vegetable protein? I'm not talking about the soy or the whey. They have a vegetable protein that takes care of that protein that you need. Okay.
I've never tried it. At least I don't think I have. I might have eaten it in some things. And I eat a little meat, not much. I like my bacon sandwiches and my ham sandwiches. So I get some animal protein that way. And you do need a little animal protein, especially if you're fighting disease, because you need it to replace the tissues in the body. But you don't need very much. So I would say I'm 95% vegetarian, and I told you I'm growing dozens of potato plants on my patio. That's what I'm growing.
So we can have French fries and dry potatoes and mashed potatoes.
I can have lots of potatoes, lots of potatoes.
let me ask you a question about that protein. When we talked earlier about the reptilians, and which is a different species than the Anunnakis. Right, Anunnaki.
Right.
So, but you were saying that for protein, they eat people. Is that what you said at one point?
No, I didn't say that.
Oh,
what I said was that we shouldn't make judgment of the reptilian species because they came, the ones from Draco, the ones that came that now come from Draco, and they're on this planet, that they have a different value system. They originated in a different universe and they have a different value system. And their value system is such that it would for them be an honor to sacrifice themselves to provide meat for the collective group of a unit. They're in, as far as I understand it, their units are units of five entities at the same time. And if they were starving, one of them would volunteer their own body to be cannibalized for the survival of the other four. And this would be considered an honor amongst their species because they have a different value system to us. So we can't judge them in the same way. Now, I'm pretty sure that if they were coming down to this planet, there might be one of the groups of reptilians who wouldn't at all mind eating human beings. But generally speaking, reptilian species as a whole, across the board, all the way back to the dinosaurs, they're pretty much a vegetarian species. They're not generally, only very, very few of them are carnivorous. They are mostly, they eat vegetable matter, not flesh. So I don't subscribe to the idea that there's a reptilian group out there just waiting to farm humans like we farm cows, you know, for hamburger. No,
okay.
I don't think that's necessarily correct.
All right. Well, remember all the mutilations that were happening, Linda, Mutant, Howl,
yes.
All those people.
Yes.
What was that about? That was a big to do.
I have no idea.
No?
I have no idea. I think that was more likely our own government doing experiments rather than extraterrestrials.
Because
it was pointless. Yes, I mean, it was pretty pointless. You know, they would take out the same parts, like circular cuts out of the cheek or just different parts of the body that they were doing the cattle mutilations and things, and then just leaving the animals. So I don't necessarily subscribe to the idea that that was extraterrestrials. It might have been, but I think it was just as likely our own government doing experimental stuff.
Wanting
to create disinformation. Think about the time that was happening in. It was happening, in when the 80s, 90s, even as far back as the 70s, when all this UFO stuff was out there and people were still going crazy about flying saucers and we were going to get invaded from space, and Reagan, and in the 80s, Reagan wanted his Star Wars program up in the skies and things. So all this stuff the government was wanting to do. So I guess it's very possible. I don't know, but it's, I think it's quite possible the government was doing those mutilations to scare people. Oh, look, we're getting invaded by extraterrestrials. We better be protected. Pay your taxes and let the government spend it on more war product. I just think so much of the stuff out there is government disinformation or distraction any given time in wherever you live.
Okay. Yeah, my labs, I think somebody called them my labs. But anyway, more information can be found on nohoax.com about this whole mutilation fiasco, whatever was going on, right? Yes?
Oh, I'm sure that Grant has books about it or information.
Okay. And for those people who want to go to nohoax.com, they can get all that information. The other thing I wanted to talk about, which may be quite interesting, is that you had talked about, you had told George at one point that when he met Billy Myers and looked at his pictures of spaceships and all of that, that they were really about coming from this planet, coming from the government. Okay. How did you figure that out?
Well, because I know those craft are not spacecraft. They're not capable of going into space. They might be capable of running around a little bit in the solar system, but I even doubt that for most of them. They're designed for in-atmosphere work, for coming, you know, just on and off the planet. I doubt that they can go into space at all. They're not designed for it. They're not the kind that go into space. They're like little landing craft. When you are on one of the big, you know, interstellar ships and you want to go down to a planet, those big craft can't come down into the atmosphere. So you have lots of little craft. And those circular disc-shaped craft with, like, domes on the top, a lot of them have actual windows around those little domes. And they're just like really like you would take a car out to go to the local shops here. You would take one of those out to go down to the planet. They're for coming on and off the planet from a big ship, which can go into deep space, or mostly those craft, I think, were ones that are from underwater bases, like, you know, Lake Titicaca and all these other underwater bases that are all over the place. Certainly under Antarctica, in the inner parts of Argentina, you know, where we now know we believe the Germans set up bases after World War II in conjunction with some of the extraterrestrials that were on the planet.
True.
So, no, those ships that you see in the Billy Meyer tapes, I do not believe, and this is my personal belief based on personal experience with spaceships, I do not believe that any of those craft that I ever saw in any of those videos would be capable of going into space, and certainly not capable of leaving the solar system.
Okay.
For sure.
So may I say that, if I may, that you have probably been abducted from a time or two or three, yes?
I've gone all my life on and off the ships, yes.
Oh, okay, right. So do you remember who came for you when you were abducted? And
well, mostly my friends came, yeah. Well,
okay, so you have
I'm still listening, I'm sorry.
So you have that memory?
Yes.
Okay. So it was, well, you got used to it, you wasn't frightened about being there or talking to them or being...
Okay, when I was a child and they were still adjusting me to life on this planet, sometimes I didn't like it. In fact, I used to, right up to the age of 10 or 11, I would make sure that my curtains in my bedroom window were closed really tight and not a tiny gap of light would go out, so they wouldn't know that I was in my room. and then they wouldn't come and get me. But it wasn't so much the awful abduction experiences that I know a lot of people do genuinely have, especially those who are abducted by the Greys, because I only ever remember having one bad experience, and it was minor. It was really more like a routine medical. It was no big deal, but I didn't like it. What I didn't like was the sensation of getting sucked out when they take you. I didn't like the feeling of it. But for me, I have to say that my experiences have always been with people I knew who were coming to get me. And what they do essentially is they render you senseless, right, and take you and then bring you back and put you back in your bed again. And it's not, there's nothing concerning about it. But when that happens, you're not actually leaving this planet, right? They're not taking you off the planet. They're taking you to locations on the planet, the ones that are doing the abducting and the testing and so on. I've had a lot of different experiences, different kinds of experiences of that sort. But mostly mine were when I was older and my friends would come and get me and take me out of body. You know, they talk about it in the Bible when the angels come and get them and show them, take them somewhere, taken by spirit on the wings of the spirit. That's how they tend to describe it. For me, it was just you get pulled out of your body and taken somewhere. But I've also physically been back and forth onto the ships several times in my lifetime, by choice, by choice.
Oh, by choice, okay. So when you do go on the ship, you interface with the people that you knew in other lifetimes, or were they?
These are my family. These are my lifelong friends and family, and you know, these are the Anunnaki.
Okay, and so they sometimes wanted to check with you as to the progression of your accomplishments and achieving your objective while you're here.
To visit, you know? I mean, you go visit your family, don't you? This, for me, is to go visit my family. And those kinds of visits don't happen often. They have happened several times in my life when they have taken me to show me things, teach me things, to explain things to me, so that I could understand better, probably because I was nagging. I want to know this, I want to know that. And probably just because I've always been a spoiled brat, I guess. You know?
I see.
If you scream loud enough, you you get treats.
you get attention, huh? The crop circles, who do you think, or how do you view crop circles?
I view them? I view them as a long story being told to humans, a genuine connection from extraterrestrial beings, possibly and most likely connected with the Pleiadian people, and telling a story of past, present, and future events, and also one whole series of them, which I believe, and I've never really made a study of them, but I have seen a lot of the pictures, obviously, because George had them. And I believe that one series of those that were done about 20 years ago were actually showing what is happening to planet Earth in this planetary alignment. You know, where we sat in the universe in the past, our actual physical history of the globe. Of the planet itself, how it came to be in the position around the sun it's in now, and where it's going to be after this next major change. Remember, I said to you one time that according to the calculations of the Anunnaki, this planet, because of the severe wobbling, solar flares, a variety of other things that are causing this severe wobbling, we're actually going to end up with an orbital path that takes us 4 degrees. Farther from the sun than we are now. And I think one of those series of crop circles was actually showing this. This is where we were. This is, where we are. This is where we're going to be. But I seem to recognize that sequence in one series. So I think they're like a form of storytelling. They're like books to be read as information.
By whom? Not by us, because we don't.
By people. No, by people. By people.
Okay.
They're
okay.
Intended for our information. But, it's like the Nazca lines. You remember the Nazca lines?
Sure. In Peru.
Well, yes. All of that was, of course, for the information of the extraterrestrials when they were coming back to land on the planet. In other words, they were markers for landing strips, directions, showing you where you were. As you know, that they could only be seen from the air. And they were there long before anybody was flying, right? So...
long time.
In the same way, you really only get the true picture of the crop circles from the air, right?
True.
Some of those crop circles may also have been information signaled out to people who were flying over us at that particular day or week or whatever. They're very easy to make. It takes only a few seconds to make a crop circle. And then it would be maybe some instructions for somebody flying over.
I see.
I don't know what they were all for. But I do believe some of them were like a map of the history of planet Earth in relation to everybody else in the universe.
And speaking of the crop circles, why did they build the pyramids? I mean, you got them in Egypt, you got them in South America, you got them in the United States, you got them in other countries. What's that about? The pyramids.
Well, the original pyramids, the two that were originally built in Giza, line up with Mount Ararat and were the two markers for the landing path, bringing the fleet in for landing in the Lebanon. Mm-hmm. The space station was on what is now Mount Zion, the controls, and the landing was in Lebanon.
I see.
And so that... The first pyramid, but more than that, the pyramids were like when you drive the countryside, say you go up the motorway in England, on the side of the road, you see these great curved cooling towers from the nuclear power plants. Mm-hmm. And they're remarkable. You will see maybe a group of three of them or five of them, these great big towers standing up against the flat countryside. And you see them, you say, what are those? Well, they're cooling towers for the nuclear power plant. Well, the Great Pyramid was also a huge power plant. Massive, right?
I see.
There was the capstone on the top, which is not there now. The capstone opened and was set with a great crystal. Huge, probably a huge diamond, I would think. But I really don't know. But it was huge, like a huge crystal. And it channeled sunlight straight down, and the sunlight came all the way down those panels. So, they were multi-purpose. The pyramids were multi-purpose. That's one thing to remember, not just one thing. They were used for all kinds of mathematical stuff, but primarily they were power stations. And when at Karnak, remember the city of Karnak? At night, and there is actually a drawing of this, a picture of it, that's a very famous picture in almost anybody who has seen or has a book about ancient Egypt and the pyramids and that whole era. There is one famous picture taken off a wall, and it shows, it's like a strip that was on a wall, and it shows two priests at either end. And they're carrying over their shoulders a long, tube thing, black and white. In the picture, it looks black. In the photos, in the books, it looks black and white. And it's draped over their shoulder, and they're carrying it between them. And it looks as if it's like something that could be 40 or 50 feet long, like a giant garden hose. Mm-hmm. And it's striped black and white. Right? Well, what it actually is a power cable. And every night at sunset, the priest would literally plug this in at the base of the pyramid and plug it into the outer wall of the city of Karnak. And Karnak was lit up like a Christmas tree. Every place that you looked, there was electricity.
Wow.
So we think electricity is a new thing, but it's not. Now, I don't know how they did it. I mean, I don't. First of all, I was never a technician. I don't know anything about electricity. But it was just like we have electricity now, except when they plugged it into this main point, all the lights came on in the city at once. It was like everything, everything. It wasn't, I don't recall there ever being any separate switches or anything of that sort. It's just there was light. There was light all night. And it, and that's the picture of it that the priest used to do every night at sunset. Yeah, it was a great. It was also a kind of temple used for healing. There was a lot of healing work done inside the pyramids, the Great Pyramid, and all those. They talk about those rooms with little alcoves in, where they found. Like mouse droppings. Maybe that wasn't in the pyramid, but maybe that was in the temple of Karnak. But I know they found, they couldn't understand, the archaeologists, why there were these alcoves in the walls, and there were small bones in the bottom of, like, mice. They found bones that they identified as belonging to mice. Well, those alcoves, that's where the great cats used to sit, that guarded the treasures of the temple. That was in Karnak itself, in the temple. But it was guarded by cats, like big Siamese cats that were really ferocious. Anyway, I'm getting off the track now. You were asking me about the pyramids. So the pyramids were powerhouses, and they were also places of teaching. They were used for teaching.
I see.
But primarily for the generation of power.
Okay, I got you. So why is it that they still are baffled about how they were built, how they moved those blocks, which weighed?
Well, they used anti-gravity, of course. They used anti-gravity to levitate the stones. I mean, there's no, laser cutting tools. And if we really want to understand about the extraterrestrial technology, we have to understand about laser technology and holographics. Those are the two fundamentals that you need to be knowledgeable about if you want to understand the technology. Do I understand it? No, because I never bothered to study those things. But I know those things are the two disciplines you really need to understand in order to understand their technology. By the way, anti-gravity is just, remember I told you about travel in deep space when we talked before, how you reverse the polarity of the light particles to move to close the space up? Right. Well, anti-gravity is the same principle, only as relates to the gravity of the Earth. You simply reverse the gravity.
Wow.
And then the things rise up instead of pulling down. Is a technology. It's a technology that reverses polarity. In this case, the polarity on the planet, which determines the gravity. And it's, you know what, I'm no scientist, so I only know the principles of these things. I do not know how they do it. If I did, I would tell. Because I tell anything I know.
Well, that's why.
But
we
I don't know. I don't know how they do it. But I know that's what they're doing. They're reversing the gravity of the ground that's underneath something. You reverse that north south. You turn it over.
So Tesla could do that.
Yeah.
Wow, he was brilliant. Was he alien?
Who?
Tesla.
Oh. Sorry, I missed his name. I didn't catch what you said before.
Tesla.
I don't think Tesla was an alien. I think he was a brilliant human, but he might, of course, have been. He might have been as much of an alien in that sense as I am.
I see.
That because we have an alien history, let's put it that way, and we know we do. Therefore, we have some innate memories. Like race memory, which is alien race memory, and therefore I guess we have ideas about things that maybe people who don't have that alien race memory don't have, I would think. I mean, that's how it seems to me.
But he was so far ahead of everybody else in terms of the electricity, AC, DC current, or radio. Marconi said he did it, but Tesla was way before him. I mean, it goes on and on. Yeah.
Yes, brilliant. And there are a lot of brilliant people still working with Tesla technology. I think I mentioned one time before, every year in Coeur d'Alene, in Idaho, they have a conference in June or July, usually at one of the hotels in town, that carries on with Bedini's work. And Bedini was doing the same stuff as Tesla was doing. You know, just all, what is it, perpetual motion, right?
Mm-hmm.
He had perpetual
mm-hmm.
motion machines, equipment. He ran stuff in his warehouse for years that had no power source at all.
Wow.
So, you know, that, yeah. And I mean, I used to go with George. He was a friend of George's, John Bedini. And I've been more than once to his warehouse where he and his brother, Gary, they used to do all this stuff. They had it all set up. And they actually, the government put John Bedini on the terror list, and he wasn't allowed to fly because he was shipping some small pieces of equipment that were like the magnetic motors. You know the magnetic
uh-huh.
motors?
Yes, yes, yes.
That George used to demonstrate. Well, he had perfected one of those and had it in production as something that he offered on his website for sale. And he'd been selling a few to people in other countries. And because of that, they put him on the terror list and he wasn't allowed to get on an airplane anymore.
Wow.
Because he was selling these little magnet things. And
so
they were really just...
The policy really did get bent out of shape when you surpassed their knowledge in terms of technology, huh?
Yes, yes. They want to control it.
Yeah. It's all about control.
Well, I'm sure that some foreign power with one of John's little toy magnet machines that generated probably enough power maybe to run a car battery or something, I don't know, but, you know, that some foreign power might get that and suddenly become a superpower of the world. I don't know. This is insanity.
Right.
But that's how crazy the world is.
Yeah. Someone had said that Edgar Casey, I mean, obviously he
right.
was brilliant. He had a lot of foresight. What is your take on him? He was also a seer, right? A clairvoyant.
Well, no.
Was he? No.
Edgar Casey, I don't know a great deal about. I did read a book about him one time, and George actually knew his son. I didn't, but George did. What I do remember about Edgar Casey is my dear friend Edna May in England, who was a clairvoyant par excellence. I have never, ever met, seen, or heard of anybody who was her level of brilliance. I really haven't. But she once asked me, she said, what do you think's wrong with Edgar Casey? And I said, who's it? This is years ago, and I was just a girl living in England. I said, Edgar Casey. She said, yes, the great American seer. She said, what do you think's wrong with him? I said, I've no idea. Why would there be anything wrong? Well, she said, there must be something wrong with him, because in order to get his information, he has to be put into a sleep state. He has to go to sleep and get the information, and he speaks it in this, like, sleeping state. And in fact, that was true. They call him the sleeping prophet. That's what his name was. He used to go into like a trance state. And I said, well, why? Oh, she said, if he was a perfect seer, he would never need to go to sleep. He would be able to say it wide awake. His own consciousness would be able to handle the input. She said, so there's something wrong with him. He can't handle the input. So I always thought that was a cute thing to say. Certainly, some of the information he came out with was brilliant. And mm-hmm. in fact, I one time had the privilege of getting some information from him. This is unusual for me when I work as a clairvoyant. But mm-hmm. it was a lady who had a severe disability, and I'd done a reading for her, and she said, I asked her, do you have any questions for me? And she said, well, not really. She said, it would be nice if I could get some information that would help my disability. And as soon as she asked, Edgar Cayce popped in. Now, I have no connection whatsoever with Edgar Cayce. I mean, I never had since. But he came in, he identified himself, and he said, write down this information and tell. And it was actually a product that she could make that would heal her. And it did. She contacted me. She'd come from Canada to see me. And she went home and made up the recipe that Edgar Cayce had given her and used it. And it was cured. And she was cured in 6 weeks. Wow. So that, to me, was absolutely amazing. So, yeah, he was brilliant. Brilliant. Brilliant healer.
Yeah, he was. But even Royal Rife, Tesla, etc., used frequencies to heal people's ailments, right?
Yes. That's where we need to go. We need to be able to develop the technology for the frequency. Ultimately, humanity would get to that point where those who were healers, because not everybody can be a healer, you know, we all have different gifts and abilities, and we're not all born to be healers. But ultimately, a person who was a gifted healer would become so gifted that they could identify and separate the frequencies of the things going on in the body simply by awareness and change those frequencies. It's a great skill that you'd have to be extremely developed to be able to do something like that, I would think. But it is possible. It's not that it's not possible, but in the meantime, we certainly could be developing technological means of measuring frequencies and knowing how to disrupt them. That's the key. Once you can separate the frequency of a healthy cell from a damaged cell and then disrupt the frequency of the damaged cell, then you're going to have mass perfect healing, a perfect medical profession in essence,
right,
because that's all you would ever have to do.
True, that's true, true. The body is a frequency, is that right? We think it's flesh and blood, right? But it's a frequency. Is that where we're coming from?
Well, it's a lot of light. It's a lot of light compressed together, and each particle of that light has a frequency. And when it's compressed together to make a physical body in the physical world, because we are manifesting in a physical world, right? So we have a holographic form, our electrical body, if you like, or our electrical field, our etheric field, our astral body, if you want to, however you want to think of it. Yes, we have a blueprint, which is frequency, electronics, and electrical frequency body that is our framework, but we are very solid inside that body. We are flesh and blood when we're manifesting on the planet.
Okay.
We're not an imaginary thing. We're a real thing.
Okay. Let's say that's true. But when you are abducted, and they don't have to open a door or open a window. You go right through the wall and the window or the ceiling.
Yes.
Is that right?
Yes. Yes.
How can they do that?
Well, let me tell you two separate things. One.
Okay.
Did you ever see the Strecker tape, Dr. Strecker's tape, at the time of AIDS, when AIDS was all being discussed?
No,
I didn't. In the Strecker tape, the medical profession at that time was telling everybody, you have sex and the man uses a condom, you will be safe. You cannot get the disease. That was what was being promoted.
Okay.
What the Strecker tape shows in his demonstration, and he has one of those vegetable strainers that you strain your veggies through, right? And he pours water through the vegetable strainer. And he said, this is the same, this vegetable strainer and the water is the same relationship as a condom to semen, because a naturally occurring rubber has holes in it. And a virus is so tiny, it can get through that hole. So thinking a condom is going to save you is purely an illusion. That's one demonstration, right? The other one I want to speak about is you take a glass jar and you fill it with marbles till the jar is absolutely full to the brim. And then you take a pint jug of water and you pour it over the marbles and you can get it all in the jar.
True.
Because there are spaces, right? So in every part of your body, there are spaces. And what the extraterrestrials are able to do is, as it were, open up your body so that your spaces can allow whatever you are facing, the wall, the window, whatever, to make its way through your spaces.
Wow.
It's a matter of spacing, right? It's
That's
about
awesome.
The spaces between the points. And in fact, when you were asking me earlier about, you know, going on and off ships, the strangest experience I ever had of that nature happened when I was staying with some friends in New York. And it had this huge window at the end of this guest room, a big, big window. And I was sitting in bed reading with a shawl wrapped around me. And the two of the ETs came and they stood there at the bottom of the bed. They just appeared in the room. And we started having a conversation. And they asked me, well, we'd like you to come with us tonight, Julian, because we have something we want to show you.
Mm-hmm.
And I said, sure, I'd love to come. But I said, I only am coming with you if you guarantee that I know where I'm going. I don't want to lose consciousness. And they laughed at me and they said, you know, we can't do that. And the next minute I'm up off the bed and floating, right? Just floating,
mm-hmm.
fully conscious. And they were standing by the window. The next thing, I felt the soles of my feet touch this cold glass window, right? And I thought to myself, oh, my heavens, they're going to take me right through this window. And then they touched me with that little one thing they have. And I was gone. I was lost consciousness. But I physically felt the cold glass on the soles of my feet as they were floating me through that window. And I thought they were going to, I didn't know how they were going to get me through because I could really feel that glass, you know? So, yeah.
Wow.
But essentially, it's essentially what I'm telling you. It's spaces within spaces, one space passing through another.
So they have the capacity to understand and to perform that feat when we don't even think it's possible. I bang my head on the wall, it doesn't go through.
Yeah, and it is also possible if you could train your mind well enough that you could not just understand what I'm saying, but actually know the truth of it, really know the truth of it in every core of your being, you could walk through walls yourself.
All right. So
there's no reason why you can't.
I see. Okay. So when Jesus
when Jesus did it.
Because he disappeared many, many times. They were after him. He walked on water the whole nine yards, you know. So So was he an alien? I mean, was he Anunnaki? I mean, was he?
Yeah, but that's not. But anybody can do these things. It's like, you know, fire walking. When people walk on fire, it's a state of mind. I actually walked halfway across a swimming pool on the water one time.
Is that right?
On the top of the water. Yes, I did.
And
my friend was sitting there and I shouted, Seda, Seda, look at me. I'm walking on the water. And as soon as I looked down to see how I was doing it, I sank. Right? I was halfway across a swimming pool at a guest resort. I don't know if anybody else saw me, but Seda did. She was with me. She saw me doing it.
Well, if the people
around
the pool saw you.
I just decided that that's. Well, I don't remember, you know, whether there were other people there or not. We were there.
But if they were, they would say either they want your autograph or want you out of there for walking on board.
They want you out. but no, I mean, that was an amazing experience. And actually, it was at a time when they were teaching us about reversing gravity. And one of the things that they taught us was It was on one of these learning trips that we had with the ETs when they would contact us all the time and give us information and teach us things. And one of the things that they taught us, they had us one day, they said, be at the swimming pool at 1 o'clock today, and we're going to show you something. So we went at 1 o'clock, and as soon as we arrived, the dozen other people, so people sitting around the pool for no reason that we knew of, just got up and left. They just got up and walked away. So we had this pool to ourselves, and they said, now get in the water, now float. So we were floating on the water. They said, okay, now stand up straight in the water. Mm-hmm. And it's quite difficult to stand upright in the water without your feet touching the bottom, you know, to hold yourself. And they said, okay, now pull your knees up to your chest. Well, now what happens to normally when you do that in the water, you roll over onto your back. You automatically go over. And that's because of your seat of gravity in your physical body. The weight changes and you roll over onto your back. So what happened with us? They said, we're going to shift now your center of gravity. And they did whatever they did to us to shift our center of gravity. And there were two of us, our arms wrapped around our legs, our knees up to our chest, and our arms wrapped around, holding our knees, legs up, you know, bobbing up and down like two corks in the water. We couldn't go on our faces. We couldn't go. We were just bobbing up and down. Now, that's not what normally happens, because your normal sense of center of gravity doesn't allow that. But they were teaching us that if you move the center of gravity, then you change the force of gravity. And that's what I was saying before about the pyramid stones and anti-gravity. That if you change the center, if you reverse the center of gravity, everything becomes possible to levitate.
Mm-hmm. So wouldn't you have to have a machine to do that?
They didn't have a machine.
Okay.
I don't know how they did it. They just shifted it. But it's something to do with your solar plexus.
Oh, is that right?
It's in your center of gravity, yeah. You move it in lower down in the body.
I see.
But normally it's in your solar plexus, and you shift it down somehow.
Huh. So that's an art in itself. That's a study. That's a process. Wow.
Yes.
I guess all these things they do?
All these things that they have done with us or with me, they're just to demonstrate what is possible for people to do, that we can all do this. That these are just things of mostly everything to do with enlightenment, which is only seeing the light, expanding your awareness. That's all it means. That expanded awareness comes with knowledge, and to get that knowledge, you require mental discipline. You have to learn. Everything is learned.
Like a school.
But we can all do it. Yes.
Right.
But we can all learn, you know.
I suspect that Jesus, in his 30 years of getting ready for his ministry, because his ministry lasted 3 years, according to documentation, I don't know, but from 30 to 33, I guess he had to go to those esoteric schools to learn all of what he had to do to raise the dead, to take the fishes and the loaves of bread and feed 5,000 people, on and on and on and on, to get people sight, make the lame walk, the whole nine yards. All of the miracles that he performed, he had to be taught, right?
You know, if we could understand it, yes, he would know, of course, because he would know it. He was born with knowledge. Don't forget that. Christ was born knowing. That's the first thing. So, yes, he would have to go through schooling to be reminded of, to remember, to be given time to develop the physical body so that the memory is fully functioning and you can remember things. But Christ had continuing consciousness, no question about it. And of course, the mother's mitochondria passes on all the race memory, so he knew who he was from day one. But he certainly learned, and he certainly took the teachings of the East, like Buddhism and Zoroastrianism, these Eastern teachings were well built into his system of explaining things. And he's also raised in a family of Essenes. I am sure his mother and his adoptive father were Essenes. So, yes, he was raised in a state of learning all these things. But a lot of things are very simple. Mm-hmm. And there really is a simple answer to all of these things that we're talking about. It's just finding a way to do it, right? And the mm-hmm. simple answer is this. When I say God, I'm referring to the ultimate creator behind everything, who is unknowable, right? mm-hmm. But just the concept that there is something there that is all-knowing, all-creative, the ultimate creator, right? Not mm-hmm. any God of any packaged belief, right? But the ultimate creator. So if one wanted to do all of these or any of these things, then all we have to have is abandonment to the creator. That's all. That's the key to the whole thing. And that's from the smallest things to the largest things. The trouble is that because we have free will and responsibilities to ourselves to learn and develop and gain knowledge, it's not an easy thing to do, to give up all that we have studied and learned and grown into. It's not an easy thing to do, to say, yes, but I see the value of it, and in the greater scheme of things, it has no value. Therefore, I abandon everything that mm-hmm. is me to the Creator. That's the antithesis of who and what we are, because we are individualized units of that Creator. We are individualized expressions of that Creator manifesting in a physical reality. So actually abandoning that self-awareness is the hardest thing that we could ever try to do. But if we could do it, then all these things would be available to us. And I'm going to give you an example of how this works, right? If, for instance, I'll tell you a story about somebody else, not about me for a change, right? Make it more interesting, right? There was a nurse, and this is well documented. There was a middle-aged nurse in World War II who was caught by the Japanese with the fall of Singapore, and was trapped with a number of other women. I don't know, a group of women, let's say 30, 40. I don't remember how many. But this was her story, that she was in an encampment with these women for a very long time before they were ultimately, you know, freed, rescued by the forces that went in. But because she was a nurse, she happened to have, when she was captured, half a bottle of aspirin tablets in her pocket. And in this camp, they were given nothing, survival food, so that they could work doing whatever the Japanese wanted them to do at the time. And they were given no medicine, no anything. And all she had, the only medicine these women had, was this half bottle of aspirin. And so this nurse prayed on this, and she said, what am I to do? I'm a nurse, I should be able to help these people, but I have nothing to help them with. And the message, if you like, the answer to her prayer that she got was, the aspirin will help them in the many ways that aspirin as a drug does help. It helps a lot of conditions, all the inflammatory and things. It's a useful drug, right? Mm-hmm. And she said, but I only have a few tablets of this. And they said, if you never count the bottle, the pills in the bottle, it will never be empty. And they were captive for about 2.5 years, and the bottle was never empty. And I read that story when I was about 14 years old, and I never forgot it. And although this may sound trivial by comparison, I've used the principle ever since. I sew and I knit. And when I'm sewing and I have a length of thread, or when I'm knitting and I have a length of knitting yarn left, and I know I've got another seam to do, or three or four more rows to knit, I never look and see how much yarn I have. And it never runs out on me.
Wow.
If you look and see. And this was demonstrated to me in a very practical way when I used to do classes. And I, the last series of classes I did for one particular group, David gave me a whole series of things to teach. He said, now, he said, you know, in the Bible, when Christ takes his disciples off into the wilderness and teaches them secretly, I said, yes. He said, well, those are true wisdom teachings that he was teaching them. He said, and I'm going to give you some wisdom teachings to teach this group of people. Now they've finished everything else and they passed the test I gave them. So he said, I'm going to give you some real wisdom teaching for them. But he said, you have to tell them that this is the truth and they have to believe you. Because before every lecture, every class, I would preface it, but I'm giving you information, but I'm not asking you to believe me. Just take it and check it out for yourself. And I always said that before everything, right? Before every talk or class or anything. He said, this time you must tell them it's the truth and they better believe it. Because these are some a few profound wisdom teachings we're giving them. And they need to know it's the truth. But he said, you cannot ask them to pay for coming to class. Because I used to ask them for $5 for classes in those days. He said, you can ask them if you like to make a donation, though. He said, but you have to promise me that you will never count the donations.
Wow.
And I said, well, I said, I hope they're going to donate enough for me to pay for my property taxes. Because in those days, I used to run the classes and charge them this little $5 for the classes to make enough money for my property taxes. That's all I ever wanted to make out of it. And he said, if you never count the money, ever, you will always have enough for what you need. Didn't matter what they gave me.
Isn't that something?
So, you know, and it's this, and it's this, and this is truly a profound teaching. If you can trust the Creator, it will always answer your needs. Maybe not your wants, but
your
always
needs.
Your needs.
Wow.
No matter what they are, whether they're as trivial as needing an extra yard of knitting yarn to finish your knitting, or enough money to pay your taxes, it will always meet your needs. But
isn't that something?
That level of trust in the Creator is very hard come by. It's because it cannot be a prayer in a foxhole, right? You cannot only have that trust when you're desperate, right? You have to have it really in principle across your life. Across every aspect of your life, you have to have that level of trust.
True. Yeah, I'm looking at, in the Bible, it says, John 14:12, it says, verily, verily, I say unto you, he that believeth on me, the works that I do, shall he also do, and greater works than these shall he do.
Right.
Isn't that something? So that's right in that line. Yeah. They have that kind
of
belief.
Same thing.
Same thing.
But it's not belief in a person. It's not belief in a person. It's belief in the Creator. It's trust. Trust in the Creator. What Christ is actually saying, when he says, believe in me, believe on me, believe what I... He's saying, believe what I'm telling you. It's true. Like I'm saying to you, no. I just told you something that is a universal truth. You better believe it, because if you believe it, you will do all these things.
Yeah,
it's that simple. And Christ was saying the same thing. And what happened, instead of people believing what he was telling them, they believed that he was doing it for them.
Christ
isn't going to do it for you, right? You have to
do
it for
yourself.
You have to develop your own trust. You have
believe.
To develop your own belief, your own trust. In the Creator, not believing that that Jesus is going to do it for you, or that anybody else is going to do it for you, that some extraterrestrial is going to swoop down in a spaceship and rescue you from the chaos that your life is in. Oh, it's not going to happen. You're responsible for yourself. We all are.
Well, how about all those women who are waiting for the man on the white horse to come save them and make them happy? What happens to that?
Well, they've got a very long wait, and the danger is that it will be a very dark horse that comes.
Listen, when we go back to the Egyptian Empire, and even in Peru, they had those entities who had the elongated heads. What was that about? Remember?
They're Hathors. Predominantly, they are Hathors. They're from Andromeda, and basically, they were space. They were extraterrestrial space, deep space travelers who were on this planet and got caught up and got left here and stuck here. And you've got lots of extraterrestrials who came to this planet in one way or another, and never escaped it. Got caught up in it. Got tied into it somehow or other. I can say that for myself. This is not my home, and never really has been, despite spending thousands of years on this planet. It's not home to me. But I've got caught in what you might call the normal human cycle. Although even that, I don't know when I'm dead. If anybody autopsies me, I don't know, because when I had malaria, when I was in Indonesia, I had extremely high fevers followed by migraine and loss of eyesight for 4 days and then a relapse of the malaria and then I got somewhat better, but I was very ill and I'd lost a lot of weight. And the Chinese doctor sent me for a brain scan, you know, one of these where they put things on your head because high fevers can do a lot of brain damage. And he sent me for this scan. Well, they came and they did it and they went away and they came back with the technicians and they redid all the equipment and then re-scanned me again, and then they sent it off to the neurologist, and the neurologist said, and I kept that report for years, I don't know what happened to it, but he said, I have general dysfunction of the brain. There's no single part of my brain operating on this brain scan. I don't have anything operating. I don't have anything working between my ears. That's not surprising. Right. No, that's seriously, that's what the brain said, general dysfunction of the brain. It was just like a huge, you know how it reads out and they can tell all the different lines which part of your brains are functioning and how they're functioning. Well, mine was just like a huge page of black scribble. Nothing was working.
Well, let's look at that. When a person is abducted in the annals of looking at all these books and looking at Taken and motion pictures, the fourth kind, whatever, Communion, they manage to erase the frequency of that memory of that person, right? And so they never remember.
Yeah.
Is that what happened?
Yeah, they kind of like, it's like amnesia. They just blank the memory. But there's a reason. There's two things going on there. One, you've got the abductions that are by the not so good people, like the Greys. You know, like you see in that Taken movie, where these people snatch you and they do all weird tests and things, and that can be very unpleasant. And some of them are not doing it for your benefit, so they're doing it for laboratory purposes. You might say, research purposes.
Okay.
They're the bad guys. They're working mostly with the government's approval. And these are bases that are on the planet. So you're not getting taken off the planet when that happens. And they actually cause an amnesia, probably with drugs. I don't know how they do it, but they probably put drugs in you so that you don't remember. Now, when you get taken off the planet onto a ship for experiences of one sort and another, and then you come back, you usually do not remember anything that went on. You might have an awareness in yourself that you did go, because you might actually remember them coming and taking you or going, but you don't remember what happened in general. And the reason for that is because when you are in that altered state, the speed at which everything happens is so much faster. And everything is moving so much faster that your normal brain speed can't process it. And actually, I think I told you one time that I did say to them one time, I'm not going to come with you ever again unless I can actually remember it. And they said, fine, you want to be able to consciously remember when you come back, as opposed to the memory coming in later. And normally, I have to say this, when you're taken by, you know, decent guys, good guys, friends, off for some reason, like they would take me on and off, when you come back, you don't remember, but usually 4 to 8 hours later, if you sit quiet, you will find memories start or awarenesses start drifting in. Either you realize you know something that you didn't know before, or some issue has been resolved for you, or you have some new knowledge that you didn't have before, or something has been fixed in your body, right? You know, whatever. Mm-hmm. In other words, memory of the experience comes in slowly. Well, on one occasion demanded that, no, I want to come back conscious. I want to know what's happening.
True.
So they said, fine, you know, you asked for it, by all means. And they did. And they put me back in my bed, and I was instantly aware of them before they actually left again. But I was so sick and ill, hours, right?
Oh,
hours.
Is that right?
Massive, massive vertigo. Talk about, you know, people get seasickness, right?
Right.
When you
right.
cannot stop vomiting and everything is spinning. It was terrible, and it lasted for 2 or 3 hours. It was awful. And they said, well, that's because everything is so much speeded up.
I see.
When you're off the planet than when you're on the planet, everything is moving so much faster. And everything has to be speeded up to take you on and off, to teleport you, right? Everything becomes that your brain can't process it. You simply get like seasick. That's what it does to you. It makes you seasick.
Okay. As in the motion picture Taken, that.
Yes.
The young lady was taken aboard the ship with the other guy, and they had a child, and which was extremely precocious, advanced, if you will, in terms of its ability to, or his or her ability to operate and see things and understand things and have remote viewing and telekinesis and telepathy and all that stuff. That's still happening then, that some people are being taken aboard and producing another generation of people who will be here on the planet to interface with the aliens who will come here and create a better world in the next 2, 3, 4 generations. Is that a good statement?
Yes, that's a reasonable statement.
Okay.
It's part of an effort to help humanity advance physically and mentally.
Okay. So if I were one of those persons, I said, well, take me as many times as you can, because I want to have that experience, right? But I won't remember anything. Yes?
Well, that's not necessarily true, because the ones that generally never get any memory back, I mean, the ones who don't know, don't have awareness, and are terrified and don't know what's been happening to them, are the ones who are taken to the bases where the negative, the greys, if you like, are operating in conjunction with the government. See, I want to make a distinction here, because I remember that movie Taken. I did watch it, and there's a lot of validity in it, right?
True.
But they are showing that movie as if the same extraterrestrials who are terrifying people are the same ones who are taking them up onto the beautiful light ships and giving them that experience, energy experience that you're now talking about, that produced the advanced child. Now, if you remember if you remember, in that movie, they did make the distinction between those who were favorites of the ETs and really got where they didn't mind their experience. Remember the girl when she grew up, she's on the street and she's surrounded and they're protecting her, right?
Of course.
So
of course.
They become, well, what I want to say here is that so far as I have any awareness of this, you're talking about two quite separate experiences and experiences engendered by two different sets of extraterrestrials. The greys who are doing the unpleasant stuff and terrifying people and abducting them and experimenting on them and taking their fetuses from them and all these awful things that have gone on for years with abductions, those people are taking them to bases on the Earth or under the water, right? But are actually physically on the planet and in conjunction with the government. And that's not the same thing as what I would refer to more likely as the silver people, right? The silver who are with the big eyes, they still have the big eyes, but who are helpers of actually the Anunnaki race predominantly, but maybe they help others, who take beings off the planet up onto spaceships and teach them and help them and instruct them and, yes, enable them to have children, even do some of the impregnating for the species. But that is never done without the agreement and cooperation of the individual involved. And they do always have memory. Eventually, they might not remember at the time. They might not have awareness at the time. But they have been contacted, explained, agreed to, and are getting on with it. And at some time, they will have that awareness, that memory.
I see. So then if I may, those individuals are usually chosen.
Yes.
Abduction process happens in many respects their whole life, right?
Yes. Yes.
Go ahead.
And sometimes when they're very young, they don't understand it. Let's put it this. They don't understand it. And maybe some of the stuff, because they certainly test you, they take little scoops out of your skin and they take blood samples from you. And they do all those things. They even put small implants in sometimes. But they are part of an ongoing agreed contract. I have to say, anything that they might have done with me, let's say, as a person who's had these experiences, anything, maybe as a child, it frightened me and I drew my curtains because I didn't like the sensation of being taken. And maybe it had a sort of spooky, scary thing because I didn't remember enough as a child and I didn't understand enough. And it took years for all my memories to come back. I mean, I was well into my 30s. Before I had all my memories back, and then I've had them all ever since, obviously. But they were very patchy before. I remembered some things and not others. And some things were pleasant and some things were unpleasant to me, especially in this going on and off the planet business.
Mm-hmm.
But it was never truly terrifying to me. They never terrified me because they were the good guys, right? And they were not setting out to terrify me. And they cared if they did terrify me. If I was frightened of something, they would take steps. But I could say that they never did anything that I hadn't already agreed to before I came into this particular lifetime.
I see.
That's so, not the same thing as normal everyday humans getting snatched up by these extraterrestrial greys doing experiments on human beings. That's a different story altogether. That's not my story.
Okay. How about if we were to go back to Betty and Bonnie Frank? What do you think about that story in the 60s?
I do remember reading that story at the time, and I thought they were very genuine and had very interesting experiences. But who they were experiencing with, I don't know enough about them or the story to know who they were experiencing with.
Mm-hmm. Do you remember the motion picture Fire in the Sky with the Waltons? The guy was in the...
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
Okay. Who... And he was missing about 3 or 4 days. Who was responsible for that? What set of aliens were responsible for his abduction?
I have no idea.
Okay.
Only he could tell you that. And unless he got to an awareness of it, he wouldn't know. See, this is the thing. Being taken off by somebody in a flying saucer is being taken off by somebody in a flying saucer. I used to say to the group when I was doing classes, you never get on the first flying saucer you see. Find out who's driving it first. Right?
True.
You better know whose saucer it is. And actually, that young man, as an adult, did actually come to a conference I was at one time and spoke about his experiences. But I don't think he ever said who took him.
I see.
I don't know if he ever remembered.
Well, sometimes you don't remember.
Right.
How about Dr. David, what's it at the university? Communion. How about that? David, I can't think of his name is.
Not David. Yeah, he wrote Communion. His wife's name's Anne. I've forgotten his name. But he had some very interesting experiences and very genuine. You know, those little people that he calls them the doctors. You know,
the short, stubby
ones who wear the little... Oh, yeah, it's true. They man the warehouse. They're actually worker bees. They man the warehouses and they take control of their maintenance guys. They are maintenance guys. And, yeah, they do work for sure, they work with the Anunnaki. I'm very familiar with them. But whenever I've seen them, it's always been on the ship. And they're always down in the loading bays, sorting cargo and stuff like that. Yeah, they're workers.
Okay, all right.
And very nice, very nice.
Okay.
They're a small, species, you know, just short species, that's all, but very nice.
All right. You don't remember Philip Corso, do you?
No, I don't. The name's not familiar to me.
Yeah, it was a colonel, Philip J. Corso. He wrote the book The Day After Roswell. That was a very popular book. He was saying that he was put in charge.
He wasn't the one who had the piece of metal, was he, from the ship?
Yes, he was.
The colonel who had the piece of metal.
Yes, because
I thought they were trying to build him into that Taken, the movie Taken.
Yes.
I thought that story was woven a lot around the colonel's experiences.
Oh yeah, well it was. I read the book The Day After Roswell. It was a good book, and he like you say, that he was the person who had that material that was found by the late young lady. Yeah. Okay. All right. Well, you know, we've covered a lot, and I really appreciate this because people who listen to this about Bonnie Hill and Betty and all the people that have gone before us, it gives them some idea that alien implants, abductions, and all that's a reality. It's a real deal. Because there are a lot of people on the planet. Yeah. But would you believe that there are a lot of people who don't know anything about what we were talking about? Or they would have a lot of doubts and apprehensions and doubts that
what's that old saying? Ignorance is bliss. And I was used to say that. What I used to say is about reincarnation. I used to do a half day workshop on reincarnation specifically.
And
I know, of course, most of religions tell you this is a big no-no, right? And I used to say, we'll do the workshop. I'll give you all the information you ever need to know about reincarnation. But you don't need to believe me, and I don't care if you don't believe me. The moment you're dead and you're getting allocated with your next life, you'll know I was telling you the truth, and then you'll remember what I said.
Then I said, that's what she was talking about.
It's the same. same with the UFO experience and the abduction experience of these people. And those who are getting the true abductions from the bad people who are getting it, I feel very, very sorry for them. Their life must be terrible and terrifying because of it. And the only thing I can say for people who maybe feel they fit into that category is don't focus on the bad experiences. Focus rather on improving your own level of enlightenment so that you are actually a more enlightened being in the true sense of having more light in you than these dark grays who are doing these experiments. Because if you are enlightened, they can't stand against you. They can't make their technology work on you. They can't do things to you. If you, in fact, become more spiritually enlightened than they are, because they are not spiritually enlightened, they are technologically enlightened. They rely completely on technology. They have no spiritual advancement within them. They're like ground zero when it comes to spiritual awareness. So if you can raise your awareness, you can beat them down every single time.
Okay.
There's no question about it. All you'd have to do is, when they came to get you, just put your hand up and they'll disappear on you, because they cannot deal with the pure light of a spiritually enlightened being. So don't focus on the abduction. Focus on working on your own enlightenment, and it will help a lot. In other words, say your prayers. That's about the fastest way to enlightenment, is say your prayers, you know.
But George said,
abandonment to the Creator. I am a human becoming, help me to become.
Yeah, that's what he was saying. Yeah. Mm. So how is he
doing,
by the way? How's George
doing? He's gone. I don't know where he's gone. But about 10 days ago, his energy just totally left. And I haven't seen hide and hair of him since. So he's gone. I don't know where.
Maybe he's working on another project.
Oh, I'm sure he's working on a project, but he's not around. He probably thinks he doesn't need to waste any more time on me. You know, it's two weeks since he died, a year.
Yeah.
In 2 weeks' time, it will be a year since he died. And 10 days ago, I just turned around and realized he was gone. So I don't know where he's gone.
So he left you with everything you need in terms of all the information, all the spiritual development, whatever you need. So he says, well, she's taking care of it. Let me go ahead and do something else, right? Maybe he decided to come back. Maybe he decided to come back and be reincarnated.
He might.
He would do
this. We are not reincarnating. Trust me. There's no more reincarnation for us. We're done. George and me and others like me, yes, we will be back to the planet, but we're not doing another human reincarnation. I'm not for sure, and I don't think George will either. No, I know I'm not.
You finished? You didn't want to become president or something like that? Or empress?
No, never had ambition on this planet.
Or the queen of the world?
I couldn't imagine anything worse. I couldn't imagine anything worse than being ruler of this planet, this chaotic upheaval.
you don't want any more?
No.
You want to give up so easily?
Yes, right. And I've had enough thousands of years on this planet. I will be here. I will be returning, though, but, you know, in my own body, not this kind of body. I will be returning for the next 300 to 400 years. I have contracted for that. So I know I have to be around for 300 or 400 more years, but then I'm really done.
To help the millennials get squared away once you do that.
Well,
they sent me,
I told you, to train as a registered nurse years ago, and I never understood why they wanted me to do that. Well, now I realize I'm part of the janitorial crew, and I can, you know, one thing a good registered nurse can do is clean toilets, so I guess I'm here to clean the toilets, right?
but a person
clean
like
up the
Zachariah,
garbage.
Well, there's plenty of that. But a person like Zachariah Sitchin's, what do you think he's doing? I mean, he was a brilliant scientist, was he not?
Oh, brilliant, brilliant scholar. He was a brilliant scholar, linguist. I don't know what he's doing. He's probably having a hard time because he had a giant ego.
Oh, I see.
He really did have a big ego, and he thought that everything he was doing was entirely his own doing. He honestly did not understand, because I spoke to him and I asked him.
Oh, you did?
And he did not understand how much help he was getting from the other side. It was all his own brilliance, and he was brilliant. He was a brilliant man, and Neil used his God-given brain, and he learned everything he needed to learn, and he did a fantastic job. But I asked him one day, "You do realize who you're working for?" And
what did he
essentially
say?
He told me that he didn't work for anybody. He only worked for himself. He did essentially. Yes.
But he
was not a pleasant person.
I see.
And he was very self-important.
Okay, all right. He was caught up
but
with
brilliant.
Himself.
But you know what? You see that in a lot of people who are absolutely brilliant. It's part of what makes them so brilliant. Because it enables them to focus, and they are constantly competing with themselves to be better and better and better. And that's, if they didn't have these huge egos, they wouldn't be as brilliant. So, one has to accept it.
Absolutely. So you're saying that the man who occupies the office of 1600 Pennsylvania Avenue here in the United States is he has a nice ego, a big ego.
Well, he has to. I mean, anybody has to be pretty egotistical to want to be president. Right? Anybody who imagines they can do the job has to have a huge ego. You know, and there's nothing wrong with that, provided it's kept in check. You know, we have two egos. We have the ego of the personality, which relates to everything that we are, our environment, our education, our background, our ambitions, our desires. These are all things that make our personality, and we have that personality has an ego that the world sees. But behind that, we have the eternal ego of the soul that carries on from lifetime to lifetime to lifetime, a spiritual ego, if you like. And of course, the knack for ultimate success is to overrule the ego of the personality. Don't destroy it, for heaven's sake, or you'll fall apart if you do. But to allow it to be overruled by the ego of the soul. In other words, to be able to say when the personality ego has it's got a good idea, it's going to do this, that, and the other thing, to be able to hear the soul say, well, yeah, that is a good idea, but it would be better if you did it this way rather than that way. And once we can do that, we've pretty got it mastered on this planet. Once we can allow the ego of the soul to advise us. And I think that's the case with Trump most of the time. Otherwise, he would never have taken on this awful job of clean up the mess.
It's these are challenging times, and so he would
terrible times. They're going to be worse, unfortunately. You know.
Well, all right. Let's make the assumption that in November he will be reelected for another 4 years. So by the time
elections.
Okay, all right.
Either he will be, or we won't have them. Right.
Okay, all right. Let's say he's president for the next four, right? Then he'll be ready to leave the planet by then. He'd be so tired of this, all of this, right? You think?
Right.
Yeah.
Yes.
Because they're about to wear him out, I think. I think they're going to give him a run for his
money. I'm not sure that he could even endure another 4 years of this.
He might be gone
before the second term is up.
Okay, yeah, I can understand. Okay, then we will get you ready to take his place. And okay, we got it. I know.
I once lived in a tiny place, small number, very small number of people, and they did ask me to be the town mayor. I said, I don't think you'd like me bossing you about all the time. That wouldn't go down well at all.
Well, I'm glad you turned that down. So because you got a better position than President of the United States coming up soon. Okay.
No, thank you. There wouldn't be enough money on earth to pay me to be a politician. Mm-mm.
I heard that. Well, Julian, thanks a lot. I really appreciate you. And we'll catch up with each other down the road sometime next week. And oh, did that guy call you, Ted, with that radio station out in Washington, D.C.?
No, I don't think so.
He said
I
he
don't
wanted
think
you.
So.
Okay, I'll call him. He said he wanted you as a guest on his show. He does a 2-hour show on some station in Seattle, Washington, every Friday from 2 on your time, 2 to 4. Mm. Okay, but he will be calling you, okay?
Okay. Okay. What's his name so I know if I see it come up on the phone?
T-E-D.
Ted.
Ted. Marr.
Okay.
Marr. Okay?
Okay. I'll remember. Yeah.
Well, thank you very much. I appreciate your time. Yeah? You take care.
My pleasure. Thank you. Thanks for having me. Bye now.
Yes. All right. You take care. Have a good one. Bye-bye now. Bye-bye. Okay. Listen, thanks very much. It's been fun. We'll catch you next time. Right here on Blog Talk Radio, and we'll do more of expanding your knowledge about UFOs, aliens, and abductions, etc., etc. In the meantime, Donald Trump says it this way: have a fun, have a good time.
Understand him. They're done by among the biggest and best law firms in the country. Same thing with the accounting firms. The accountants are a very, very large, powerful firm from the standpoint of respect. They're highly respected. Big firm, a great law firm, you know it very well. They do these things, they put them in. But people don't understand tax returns. Now, I did do a filing of over 100 pages, I believe, mm-hmm. which is in the offices, and when people went and saw that filing and they saw the magnitude of it, they were very disappointed. And they saw the detail. You'd get far more from that. And I guess we filed that now 3 times. But you get far more from that than you could ever get from a tax return. But when you're under audit, and I'm under very continuous audit because there are so many companies, and it is a very big company, far bigger than you would even understand. But it's a great company, but it's big, and it's complex, and it's probably feet high. It's a very complex instrument, and I think that people wouldn't understand it. But if I were finished with the audit, I would have an open mind to it. I would say that. But I don't want to do it during the audit.
Okay. Listen, the challenges go on and on and on, and we appreciate you listening. And next time we will have Julian and some others back to talk about alien, UFO, abduction, all the activities that's esoteric in nature. Lights in the Night, right here on Blog Talk Radio. I'm Russ Johnson. You have a good one.